goals. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we're going to take a look at some listener emails, a bizarre UFO that was photographed over London, six mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle, a Victorian ghost that was picked up by Google Street View, an Anchorage murder trial that begins with the tale of an alien. The eyewitness to the O'Hare UFO releases the video of the craft, and curiosity rocks that were created some 8,000 years before Stonehenge and the pyramids. That and a whole lot more coming up in this 23rd episode of the 13 Skulls podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the 13 Skulls. I'm your host, TJ, coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. Let's go ahead and get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you want, sign the Frapper map. I love to know where people are listening to the show from. Give me an iTunes. You know, I love to know what people's opinions of the show is. Also, if you want, give me a vote in Podcast Alley so I can get up in the ranks there. But if you don't feel like doing any of that and you want to shoot the show an email, the email is the13skulls@gmail.com. Now, I have set up a new email, which is info@the13skulls.com. If you feel like sending me a promo, links for the show, ideas, news, whatever you want, send it to that one too. If you want to call and leave a voicemail, the phone numbers are 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to take a look at were some listener emails that were sent in. And the first one, well, it's not really a listener email. I mean, I guess he listens to the show, but it's Ty from the Doomcast show. Now, I hate to say that Doomcast is, at least for now, no longer. And I hate to say that it's no longer with us because, you know, I love that show. It was a good gaming show. And, you know, they had a lot of great content, but due to the reasons why they quit the show, I can completely understand that. But Ty has decided to go ahead and, he has been doing another show called the Crossroads Podcast, and it's about the show Supernatural. If anybody's to the show Supernatural, go listen to it. It's at crossroadscast.libsyn.com. You can find the feed there. You can also find them in iTunes if you want. You know, I wanted to give a shout out to them because I love their show. I hated to see it go away, but you know, this podcasting stuff, especially with the way that they had to do their show, can get really expensive. Now, for me, it hasn't gotten that expensive because I get all my stuff for free on the web. But these guys actually had to go and buy games or rent games and play. It was expensive. So I can see why they didn't, you know, decide to keep it going. But anyway, just had to give a shout out to them and let you guys know that if you like the show Supernatural and you want to support Ty's, you know, endeavors, go and listen to them. Like I said, you can find the feed at crossroadscast.libsyn.com, and you can add a /RSS if you want in there, that, you know, it'll give you the feed for it. But anyway, I'll be playing a promo for them just as a kickback to the good old days when that show was around, because I just loved them. It was a great show. But the next email I wanted to share with you guys was from Cameron. Cameron was talking about the alien abduction video that I had posted a while back. And I'll post a link up to it so you guys can go look at what he's talking about. But he says, I was listening to your podcast, and when you got to the part about the alien abduction film, I knew straight away what film you were talking about. I'm a little behind on listening to the show, but you know, he wasn't sure if anybody sent anything in, but I haven't seen anything anybody sent in so far, so you are the first, and I really do appreciate you sending that in, Cameron. He said that he was going to give me the word on the film. It's called Alien Abduction Incident in Lake County, or the McPherson Tapes. Says, I haven't seen the original, the latter of the two. That may have been the one about the birthday, but the alien abduction was a remake of the McPherson tapes and takes place while a family is supposed to be having a Thanksgiving feast. It was a film documenting what little we can do to defend ourselves in a hostile situation involving aliens. And he has, like I said, posted a couple of links up. I will post those up so you guys can go take a look at it. If anybody else has heard anything like this, let me know. I'd love to hear about it, because I'd love to know, really, if stuff is fake, I want to know about it. Because some of this stuff, you know, that's out there that we talk about in the show, some of it does seem a little too good to be true. This next email that I wanted to read to you guys was from Lily Mama. And for any of you that have been listening to the show for any amount of time now, know who Lily Mama is. She's a really big part of the Eerie Radio show. She's been on the Newosphere, you know, to tell her experiences. But I had to read this email. I want to read this email because it's just a fascinating story. This woman has so many different things going on. It's crazy. But she sent me in a creepy dream and experience that she had on March 20th of this year. She said she had an experience and she wanted to tell me about it. I had this creepy dream that I can pretty much only remember the ending of because it freaked me out so much. I remember being in someone's house with this mother and her two kids. I had the understanding that there was some weird stuff going on and she was scared. I don't know why I was there. I only knew she wanted for me to see what was terrifying her and her family. The room was partially lit by some lamps. It looked like it was about a 20 by 30 living room, a 20 by 30 feet living room. When I looked to my left, I could see a queen size 4-post bed against the left corner, with the mother in the middle of the bed sitting against the headboard. She was clutching her two kids and her feet brought underneath her. She had blonde hair done in a 1950s style with a 2-inch thick plastic type bandana pulling her hair from her face. But the sides were flipped so that the bandana type curl didn't touch her shoulders. She said something to the effect of, it comes all of the time. You can even call it if you want to. I kept thinking, why the hell would you want to call or summons the thing? Then before I knew it, I saw a boy that had jet black hair and a bowl cut. His eyes were black and his face was so dirty. It looked as if he was a drawing and his face was scribbled on with a black pen or pencil. He just stared at me with those black eyes. I was definitely scared, but didn't know what to think because I didn't know what would happen. He was at the far side of the room against the wall. He changed from a boy to a girl that looked like a girl from the movie The Ring. She had long hair dangling in front of her face. Then in almost a glitch, she changed back into the boy. The boy had a very dirty white shirt and gray pants with no shoes. The girl had a very dirty white nightgown on. She didn't look at me as much as the boy did, mostly staring down. Then she started to float about 5 feet towards me in a quirky, jerky motion and stopped. It turned back into the boy and stared at me again with those black eyes. The woman yelled, "If you ring a bell, it will sometimes leave." She rang the bell and handed it to me. I rang the bell violently and yelled to go away in Jesus' name. The boy turned back into the girl and started to float slowly towards me. All I could think of is this thing is a friggin' horror movie. This can't be happening. I rang the bell over and over and started yelling, "Go away in Jesus' name." And it didn't go away, it just kept coming closer. Finally, I whipped the bell at the thing, thinking it would go through it. But it hit the now boy in the stomach and fell to the floor. He just stared at me. I was about to scream or shit my pants when it jerked, and in a blink of an eye, it was right in front of me, about 5 or 6 inches away from me. It had turned back into the girl and I woke up. My TV was on and I got the eeriest feeling that I was being watched from my hallway. I could feel it resonating. I looked at the clock. It was 3:01 a.m. I didn't have sleep paralysis or anything this time, so I immediately started saying, "For God has not given me a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. Go away in Jesus' name. You are not welcome here." I wouldn't look into the hallway, I just looked up at the ceiling and at the TV occasionally. I was so scared of what I would see. I kept thinking, "Holy crap, how am I going to deal with seeing what I just saw in my dream? God, I can't deal with this. I just can't. Please don't let me see anything. It's bad enough I can feel it." I immediately started to sweat profusely, probably from the nightmare and being so scared. I kept praying aloud, but it wouldn't go away. I could just sense that the thing in my dream was staring at me in the hallway, but I wasn't sure if it was the boy or the girl. Finally, I had a sense that I was to read something from the Bible out loud, not screaming the verses, but saying them with authority. I flipped to Psalms 91 and read. Then to the Lord's Prayer, it still wouldn't go away. I read another passage and another. Now the room got really cold. I was covered in goosebumps even though I was wearing a nightgown. Then I felt the sense that I should just repeat, "Go away in Jesus' name," and ask for God to bring me one of his heavenly angels to get this thing out, and then have another angel to protect my house so it can't get back in. Then I got the courage to get up and walk around and claim my house, saying, "This is my house. Whatever you are not welcome. You leave in the name of Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for the power of your name. There is power in the name of Jesus." And I kept repeating this through every room in my house. Then I went to bed and just sat quiet for a minute and I waited for some sort of feeling. I felt a peace wash over me and I calmed down. I lay down and thanked God over and over and fell peacefully asleep, waking up to the sound of my phone ringing at 6 a.m. Then I remembered my dream and thanked God again for the help. And she used to have a dog that she said would stare off at some places and get kind of upset and, you know, would act a little weird looking off into a different room when nobody was in there. She said that she finally had to give her dog up because he couldn't hold his bowels anymore. And I feel for her. I hate having to get rid of your dog, Lily. I hate that you had to do that. She says that he was old and he was sent to a farm with other old retired German Shepherd dogs to live out their days. Mostly are retired police dogs. She said he used to always stop and stare at one part of the living room for no reason. It always made me feel a little uneasy when he did that. Today I began to wonder if the reason he always slept by my bed for 12 plus years and always stayed just outside the kitchen was because he felt as though he was protecting me. But from what? Days before I had to give him up, he was watching me cook and glanced over to the living room. Whatever he was staring at freaked him out to the point where he quickly went to the bathroom and hid in the bathtub shaking. That happened only about 3 weeks ago. He's been gone now for about 2.5 weeks, And this is the first time since he's been gone that I felt anything so uncomfortable and malicious. She was wondering if anybody else had any similar experiences. If anybody out there has an experience or a dream or anything like that, like Lily Mama has been experiencing, or if you just have any experiences at all, please send them to me. I would love to put them in a show in the show and see if maybe we can get some of you guys together to talk about what's going on. You know, it's strange to me, dreams in general. Dreams to me are just an odd thing. It was like the other day I had a dream. Now, I got home from work. I had a bad headache. I wasn't feeling that great, so I decided to lay down on the couch. Now, this is me personally, TJ. This is what I experienced. I lay down on the couch the other day, and I didn't know what to think of it because if I do dream, I don't ever really remember it. It's rare. I might remember a couple or a few dreams a year. I don't really remember my dreams. For me, falling asleep is no more than closing my eyes, waiting for myself to shut off. Basically, things, you know, you close your eyes and everything goes black. I close my eyes, it goes black, and then the next thing I know, I'm waking up. I don't really remember my own dream. So I had one the other day that was kind of weirded me out a little bit. I don't know what to think of it because I kind of remember my physical state while it was happening. It was kind of an odd situation. All I remember is being in a hotel. And I was going up an elevator, and I had a little boy in the elevator with me. I don't know who he was. He was just a kid on the elevator. You know, a little boy, maybe 5-7 years old, somewhere around in that area, kind of reminded me of myself when I was a kid. Well, all of a sudden, we get up to the top floor, and the elevator starts to fall. And the numbers on the, you know, the digital counter, you know, where you can see what floor you're on, are slowly going down. Faster and faster and faster. And the next thing I know, we're, you know, falling all the way to the bottom and hitting the floor. And there's this huge shake. Everything's, you know, getting destroyed around me. And the next thing I know, I'm pulling this kid out of the elevator and running up to the front desk of the hotel, and it doesn't seem like anybody's freaking out about it. It's like everybody's staying pretty calm. I see some people behind the girl behind the counter come out of a room like they're going to go do something. To me, it felt as if they were going to go do something about the elevator, but I said the elevator just fell 15 floors. And they didn't seem to really care. It didn't seem to really bother anybody. But, you know, that was pretty much all I remember from that point. You know, I was holding the kid in my arms and said the elevator just fell 15 stories. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I remember also being outside looking up at the hotel after it had happened to see if it really was 15 stories. And that was it. That's all I really remember. Anyway, that was my dream. It wasn't nearly as creepy as Lily Mama's. Basically, it was just that dreams are strange to me. I don't really understand them. I don't see what the point of them is. It doesn't seem like there's any dream, I mean, at least not the majority, that really are significant in any way. I mean, I've had a repetitive dream where it happened over and over and over and over and over every single night and got progressively longer for an entire month. I don't know if y'all have listened to that show whenever I explained it, but go back into the archives and you'll find it. Anyway, I think it's strange. If anybody else out there has any creepy, weird, crazy dreams, shoot it to me. I'd love to hear about it.
Eerie Radio, opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Eerie Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.eerieradio.com.
Greetings. You are about to enter the Noosphere. A roundtable stream of consciousness podcast on subjects related to and inspired by the paranormal, metaphysics, and science. Join us for our broadcasts or visit our website at www.newaspherepodcast.com, where you can download past episodes and join in our discussion forums. We will break your mind.
Many were infected. Infected with a disease that thinks, a disease that talks, and as the victims finally succumbed, a disease that walks. One man fought back. He resisted the voices. Perry Dawsey carved out pieces of himself in a desperate attempt to survive. He won. But as Perry awakes in a government hospital, he realizes he can still hear those voices. It's not over. And now it's even worse, because the infection has become contagious. Contagious is the bloody sequel to Scott Sigler's horror thriller, Infected. Contagious is available in stores December 30th, or reserve your copy now at scottsigler.com/pre-order. Get the book the day it comes out, because if someone spoils the ending, you'll hate yourself enough to use the chicken scissors.
All right, well, this next article I want to talk about really isn't an article, so I don't have a link to post to it for you guys. It was sent to me in an email from Anthony, and it's courtesy of the Associated Press, the AP. Like I said, I don't have a link to the site for the article, but I'll go ahead and read it to you. In Wellington, New Zealand, on March 19th, a rare reptile hatchling was discovered. A hatchling of a rare reptile with lineage dating back to the dinosaur age has been found in the wild on the New Zealand mainland for the first time in about 200 years, at least according to a wildlife official. The baby Tuatara, T-U-A-T-A-R-A, was discovered by staff during routine maintenance work at the Karori Wildlife Sanctuary in the capital, Wellington. Conservation manager Raywin Impson said, "We are absolutely thrilled with this discovery. It means we have successfully reestablished a breeding population back on the mainland, which is a massive breakthrough for New Zealand conservation." Tuatara, which that's what I'm going to call it. If I'm wrong, somebody let me know, which measures up to 32 inches when full grown, are the last descendants of a lizard-like reptile species that walked the earth with the dinosaurs 225 million years ago. There are estimated to be about 50,000 of them living in the wild on 32 small offshore islands cleared of predators. But this is the first time a hatchling has been seen on the mainland in about 200 years. Now, I'll post a copy of this picture up for you guys so you can, you know, take a look, at least to see the picture, you know, so that way you can at least get somewhat of an idea of what I'm talking about. The article goes on to say the New Zealand natives were nearly extinct on the country's three main islands by the late 1700s due to the introduction of predators such as rats. Impson said that the hatchling is thought to be about 1 month old and likely came from an egg laid about 16 months ago. Two nests of eggs the size of ping pong balls were unearthed in the sanctuary last year, and the Tuatara were expected to hatch around this time. About 200 Tuataras have been released since 2005 into the Karori Sanctuary, which was established to breed native birds, insects, and other creatures. The Tuatara have unique characteristics such as two rows of top teeth closing over one row at the bottom and a parietal eye, parietal, a dot on top of the skull that has been believed to be light sensitive and is sometimes referred to as the animal's third eye. Now, that's all the article says. I wish I could to read off more to that, but like I said, I'll post a picture to it so you guys can at least see what the rare reptile hatching looks like. All right, well, this next thing that I wanted to talk about, again, isn't an article that I can post a link to because it was sent to me in an email, more or less was copied and pasted into an email. But they're Curiosity rocks, which are 8,000 years built before Stonehenge and the pyramids. I wish, again, that I could give you guys some kind of an idea who this is from, but I really can't. The rocks of Göbekli Tepe are a curiosity and curiosity rocks. They are curiosity rocks. It says a shepherd wandering on the hillside where grows a solitary mulberry tree spies the top of an oblong rock that appears to have been shaped by human hands. He notices others like it in a pattern. He returns to the village and tells what he has seen, and the digging begins, and the year is 1994. It says Göbekli Tepe is the most important archaeological site in the world, according to David Lewis Williams, the Witwatersrand University in Johannesburg. Ian Hodder at Stanford University says that it changes everything. Stonehenge was built 5,000 years ago in 3000 BC, and the pyramids of Giza in 2500 BC. Carbon dating of organic matter adhering to the megaliths at Göbekli Tepe revealed that it is 12,000 years old, meaning it was built around 10,000 to 9,000 BC. Tom Cox, which it doesn't say who he is, says Göbekli is thus the oldest site in the world by a mind-numbing margin. It is so old that it predates settled human life. It is pre-pottery, pre-writing, pre-wheel, pre-everything. Göbekli hails from a part of human history that is unimaginably distant. Perhaps the strangest part of the Göbekli story is that around 8,000 BC, its inhabitants entombed their temple under thousands of tons of earth, creating the artificial hills on which the unnamed shepherd walked in 1994. It was a task of unspeakable labor. No one knows why Göbekli was buried. It says 30 years later, a shepherd saw a patch of rocks peeking through the soil, blah, 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 blah. There's not a whole lot much more to this, but I will post a picture up to it so you guys can take a look at it and let me know what you think. I didn't really do too much more looking into Göbekli Tepe because whenever I did the two sites that I went to, well, three really, the third one was just useless in every which way, shape, and form. But the first two didn't really have any more information than what this article had. So if anybody knows anything more about Göbekli Tepe, let me know. It's an interesting picture. You see these like a rock wall, like what would typically be built by anybody, stacking rocks on top of each other to make a wall. But you see these T-shaped objects made out of rock, and one of them, it's showing the face of it, and it looks like it has, I don't know, anything that would have been a four-legged mammal with a tail on the front of it. It really doesn't be distinct, like to be distinct towards one particular type of animal, and it also has this outraised, or I don't know, it could just be the way you're looking at it, could be carved into it, like a groove that goes diagonally from the top right to the bottom left, with the animal below it. Like I said, I won't post a link up to the picture, I'll post the picture itself so you guys can go take a look at it. If anybody knows anything else about Göbekli Tepe, let me know, I'd love to know more about it. All right, well, the first article I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And it's a bizarre UFO or UFOs captured over London. And it says London's about to be invaded by aliens. At least that's what it looks like in a bizarre picture taken from Google Street Map service. My apologies if my accent came out really bad right there. A British woman found the spooky image of a whole group of UFOs in the sky after the new Google service was launched last week. Now, this article was posted on the 30th of March, so, you know, if it was before that, let me know. Faye Sharp, 18, got more than she bargained for when she was trying to find her friends in her neighborhood at Bethnal Green, East London, on the online map, and came across some unidentified flying objects in the skies above Wolverley Street. She told The Sun, "I was checking out the road to see if I could spot my mates. I thought it looked very strange and zoomed in. I thought it was some planes, but they looked pretty close together for that. Maybe they are UFOs." Ufologist Nick Pope is excited about the picture. "It appears to show nine objects flying in perfect formation. About the only thing I know that can do this is the red arrows, and it's not them." And so that was Nick Pope saying that, but that's pretty much it. Like I said, I'll post a link up to it. We got a lot of stuff to go through, y'all, so I'm going to have to fly through this stuff because we're already at about 20 minutes. So I want to go ahead and get moving because we got a ton of articles to get through. The next article I wanted to take a look at is another article by naturalplane.blogspot.com, and I got a couple of those coming y'all's way. At least from what I can see here, I got another six articles just from them. It's another photo, a disc-shaped UFO captured over San Francisco. It's kind of hard to tell. It could be a bird. I don't know. It could be anything, really. The article is really short. It's a statement from the witness. It says, "I was reviewing the photos of my last trip to San Francisco, and I noticed that a flying object appeared at the left of the City Hall dome. I had taken other photos, one 8 seconds before and another 40 seconds later, in the same position, and the UFO doesn't appear in them. I took these photos using a Sony model DSC-W90. And what you'll see is sorry about the background noise. If you guys can hear that, there's a big truck driving by. Anyway, what you'll see in the picture is the Capitol Dome. You'll see it from the front. You'll see what is the long grass runway up to the building. And if you look, there's three pictures. There's one from top to bottom. There's one of the UFO, the closest one that's zoomed in. You can see just a corner of the dome that he's talking about on the bottom right corner, and the UFO in the middle. Then the next one down, it's a little bit further away, and then the next one, you know, obviously manipulated the photo at least a little bit to zoom in on that one part. But if you see the original photo, you see the whole entire building, the Capitol building or the City Hall, and you can see just a faint little dot where the UFO is. Like I said, it could just be a big bird soaring without flapping its wings. It kind of resembles that for me. It almost looks like you can see the head on the right and the tail on the left. But, you know, you guys go take a look at this and let me know what you think. It's an interesting photo. It doesn't look to me as if it was photoshopped, but to me it looks like it could just be a bird. Now, this next article that I want to take a look at is courtesy of abcnews.go.com. Six mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. And I love the Bermuda Triangle. I just do. There's something really fascinating about an area that is unexplainable to people. I mean, there's a lot of people that say that they can explain it. There's a lot of people that say that the Bermuda Triangle is absolutely nothing, but I just think it's fascinating. It's an area that is just, it's interesting. It's not the only triangle area in the world, but it's an interesting thing to know that there could be weird going-ons here that cause planes to crash and boats to sink. Miami, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda are separately some of the most sought-after vacation spots in the world, but together, lines between them make up the approximate boundary of one of the most mysterious and deadly areas on the planet, the Bermuda Triangle. Ever since Chris Columbus sailed through the region in 1492, some weird, unexplained stuff has taken place over the Atlantic Ocean there. Everything from bad weather to supernatural forces has been blamed for several high-profile disappearances. And here are just some of the tales that deliver more questions than answers. In 1945, bomber squads disappear, and so do their rescuers. In 1918, U.S. battleships go missing with 306 on board. The USS Cyclops was a collier that operated between the East Coast and the Caribbean, servicing the Atlantic Fleet for some time, and then ran transatlantic journeys until February 1918. After fueling British ships in the South Atlantic and Brazilian waters, the ship embarked from Rio de Janeiro on February 16, 1918, came into Barbados in early March, and then promptly disappeared completely. The 306 crew and passengers were never heard from again, and while there are many theories, according to the Naval Historical Center, it's one of the sea's unsolved mysteries. The next one is 1948. A DC-3 commercial flight vanishes. On December 28, 1948, Captain Robert Lindquist took off from San Juan with two crew members and 29 passengers heading for Miami. When the plane was 50 miles away from Miami, Lindquist reportedly radioed to the Miami airport for landing instructions. The airport reply was met with silence, and the plane was never seen again. According to the investigation by the Civil Aeronautics Board, the plane had electrical difficulties and low battery power. Those findings have not stopped many from blaming supernatural forces on the disappearance. Now, the next one was 1976. A Panamanian ship trades cargo for mystery. The Panamanian ship Sylvia L. Osa was a cargo ship that was a regular near the mysterious waters of the Bermuda Triangle. But in 1976, it fell victim to the mysteries of the Triangle when she and her 37-person crew disappeared without a trace. The Coast Guard is reportedly still looking for clues to what happened to the 590-foot ship. In 1948, Star Tiger drops out of the sky. On its way from England to Bermuda in 1948, a Star Tiger passenger plane vanished with more than 30 people on board. England's Civil Air Ministry conducted an investigation and found that a ship, the SS Troubadour, reported seeing a low-flying plane about halfway between Bermuda and Delaware Bay. If that plane was the Star Tiger, it was horribly off course. And the last one for now, in 1963, something smells funny with the Sulphur Queen's disappearance. The Sulphur Queen was a 523-foot tanker that was originally intended to carry oil but was converted to carry sulfur. On February 3, 1963, the ship sent a radio report that placed it 230 miles southeast of New Orleans. According to a report by Time magazine, then nothing. There was no SOS and no warning of trouble. The ship simply disappeared. 2 weeks later, pieces of a raft, a life vest, and a broken oar washed up on Florida beaches. An investigation launched by the Coast Guard shortly after the disappearance concluded that the vessel was nowhere near seaworthy and likely caught fire at sea. Such a conclusion was not far-fetched. According to the article, once the Queen actually sailed into a New Jersey port with fires smoldering, unloaded her cargo, and sailed off again, still burning. I thought that was really weird that you would actually set sail in a ship that's on fire. I mean, would you not at least take some time out to put your fires out before you set off again? I mean, I can see pulling into port with your fire smoldering and unloading your cargo, putting the fire out, and maybe then going back out. But to go out with it still burning is just, it's amazing what some people will do. All right, y'all, well, we're going to go ahead and take a break here, play you guys some music. We got coming up a ghost photo that baffles the experts. The Plain of Jars, which is an interesting place with jars made of stone. Also, a dinosaur image is noticed in a temple ruin. Also, 1,000 kidnapped in a Gambian witch hunt. That and a lot more coming up in this episode of the 13 Skulls. We'll be right back after this. Urban terror. You take a life and claim it's just a small error. Randomly, people die innocently. Babylon a bust them gun indiscriminately. Normally, on the poor community, but recently they give a damn about your ethnicity. Them heavy on it with them authority. We got the rights to fight for a public inquiry. They close the case like they close the curtain. T.O.P. termination of a person with their shoot to kill policy. It ain't nothing but a fallacy. Damn with your apology. Urban terror. You take a life and claim it's just a small error. A victim of their shoot to kill policy. It ain't nothing but a fallacy. Damn with your apology. Urban terror. You take a life and claim it's just a small error. You shoot the kill John, the menace is an innocent victim he was. Now you're seeing who the menace is. The same thing with Derek Bennett. Feel like who no go in it. The wrong information who sent it. Yo, Harry Stanley, you're shooting his head. Just because the man walking with that saber leg. You shoot Cherry Coach, she never dead. I shall lay in her bed. You're paralyzed, her two legs. A victim of their shoot to kill policy. It ain't nothing but a fallacy. Damn with your apology. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at was an interesting photograph in an article by thesun.co.uk. And it's a photo that supposedly has just baffled the experts. An eerie image of a photo of a Scottish castle has got ghost experts spooked. The scary shot was unearthed during the biggest ever investigation into photographic evidence of ghosts. The picture taken in May of last year shows a spectral figure in 15th century dress peering out of a barred window at Tantallon Castle in Fife. Now, you can take a look at the picture, and, you know, anybody's got an opinion on it, let me know. It says, no mannequins or costume guides are used at the castle, and photo experts have confirmed that no digital trickery was used. Even ghost skeptic Professor Richard Wiseman admitted to being puzzled. It is certainly very curious, he said. We ran it by three photographic experts, and they said it hadn't been photoshopped at all. The figure appears to be in period costume, but we know 100% that Tantalon Castle is not the sort of place that has dummies or costume guides. They just don't go that far in that sort of thing. I suppose it could be a visitor looking a little bit strange. Perhaps someone will come forward. Another possibility is an odd reflection of sunlight, but it does look very much like a person, and the explanation is not obvious. Tantalon Castle, a ruined fortress dating back to the 14th century, stands on a remote rocky headland near North Berwick on the east coast of Scotland. It was badly damaged in an attack by Oliver Cromwell's forces in 1651. Christopher Atchison, who took the photo, said, "I was not aware of anyone or anything being present in my picture." Psychologist Professor Wiseman from the University of Hertfordshire, who has made many studies of the supernatural, launched the investigation about a month ago. Members of the public were asked to submit ghostly images for experts to analyze, the best of which were posted on the website scienceofhauntings.com. More than 250 pictures were received from all over the world, and more than a quarter of a million people voted for what they consider to be the most convincing photo. This photo is very interesting. Like I said, I mean, in a weird kind of way, it looks like someone from that period of time, from the 14th century, 15th, 16th century, somewhere around in that area. It's actually a really creepy photo. Now, to be honest with you, the original photo, the photo itself has an enlargement of that section of the photo enlarged, on top of the actual picture down in the corner. You guys will be able to see a closer up of it. It's creepy. It really is. You can see a distinct eyes, nose, mouth, face, all that with like that ruffled neck collar kind of thing. You know, it's creepy. I'm getting goosebumps sitting here looking at it. But anyway, I'll post a link up to it. You guys, if you got an opinion on it, let me know. But go take a look at the picture. It's creepy. All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of UFODigest.com. And it's a photo of what they're saying is a UFO next to an RAF jet. Photographs taken of a UFO hovering next to an RAF jet over Scotland were treated very serious by military investigators. Newly released Ministry of Defense file showed today. I don't really know how you could be hovering next to a jet if the jet is moving. There's not too many jets out there that can hover. There are, but not very many. Anyway, witnesses saw the mysterious large diamond-shaped object hanging in the air for about 10 minutes before it ascended vertically at high speed. Military experts concluded the aircraft was a Harrier, which is one of the ones that can hover, but it could not identify the UFO despite apparently commissioning detailed line drawings of it. Fearing there could be significant media interest, the MOD took the unusual step of briefing ministers about the sighting. The incident also discloses that British military intelligence officers tasked with investigating UFO reports took a close interest in claims the U.S. were developing a top-secret spy plane. The sighting is included in the military UFO documents made available online by the National Archives. Anyway, it's an interesting, it lists some other incidents. A woman who said she was approached by an alien with Scandinavian-type accent as she walked her dog near Norwich in November of 1989. Sighting by crews of six RAF Tornado jets of a UFO over Germany in 1990 of November, which they believed to be a stealth aircraft. The MOD's decision to halt a project to computerize UFO records amid concerns about public reaction if it became known. Now, it does go on to show, quite a bit of other stuff, but the picture was pretty interesting. To me, the picture, I can see everything in the picture but the diamond-shaped UFO to be real. And the reason I say this, now, I'm no photo expert. I don't even have Photoshop. I couldn't tell you if this is real or if it's not real. I'm just saying that to me, personally, looking at this picture, it doesn't look real. It looks like somebody tried to make it look real, but it doesn't look real. And the reason I say that is that the color of the object, the brightness of it, the it's so vivid compared to everything else, looks a little fuzzy, like a little grainy because of the pixelation of it. This thing doesn't look as pixelated as everything else in the picture. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. You guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think. Now, this next article is courtesy of sdparanormal.com, and it's a Victorian ghost picked up by Google Street View. A ghostly figure dressed in Victorian clothes was filmed by Google Street View before vanishing into thin air. It says experts have been called in to examine the Google ghoul found at a former Victorian Docklands, which has a dark and sinister past. The woman, dressed in a long skirt, crisp blouse, bow tie, blue boater hat, and scarf, appears to be shimmering above the pavement. She was captured by the Google Street View cameras in Tiger Bay, Cardiff, the scene of the murders and unsolved mysteries going back 200 years. Local medium Jane Cohen, 39, said apparitions have often been caught on film but are visible to the naked eye. This woman is very smart, but she is dressed in clothes that you just don't see these days unless you are in a period drama on TV. The old Docklands have been redeveloped with a theater, waterside restaurants, and plush apartments, but local historians say the woman was filmed in the heart of the notorious Tiger Bay, once the busiest seaport in the world. The image was filmed last June as the Google cameras filmed the streets and landmarks of the Welsh capital. The Google cameras have also captured a spooky ET alien figure in New Jersey. Now, I haven't seen the one in New Jersey. I'm going to have to see if I can find that, but I have my issues with this photograph. Now, just because you're in a different period of clothing, I've seen some very strangely dressed people. Just go to any type of Civil War reenactment or some kind of, any type of reenactment, you'll see, like they said, a TV drama. It could be anything, but it looks like where they're saying she's hovering above the ground, to me, obviously looks as if there is just some kind of a distortion in the photo. I mean, it looks obvious that there is some kind of a distortion there. It looks like, you know, they tried to mess this picture up on purpose. I don't know. Go take a look at the picture yourself. If anybody knows anything about it being a hoax or if it really is real, let me know. I'd love to hear about it.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
Are you seeing this?
I must be getting interference. It almost looks like...
We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden.
Oh my God.
God did say,
look at it.
Hold position until I can confirm.
I'm going in closer.
Wait a minute, damn it! What are you doing?
I can't see it well enough. If I could just get this...
Are you reading me? Stop it! That's an order!
Almost got it.
God, knowing good and evil.
No!
Eden. A podcast novella by Phil Rossi, author of Crescent and Notes from the Vault. Available at podiobooks.com and crescentstation.net.
You will not surely die, the serpent said to the woman. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.
Eden. Available at podiobooks.com and crescentstation.net.
Well, this next article that I wanted to talk about is, again, courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And it's nothing paranormal. It's a video that I wanted you guys to watch of a kayaker that plunged 127 feet off a waterfall and survived. Says, faced with this awesome waterfall, most of us would be happy to stand at the side and enjoy the view. For one man, however, that wasn't enough. Pedro Olivia risked his life by jumping into his kayak, paddling straight over to the edge, and dropping an astonishing 127 feet off the Salto Belo Falls in central Brazil. He fell headfirst for 2.95 seconds before hitting the churning waters below at 70 miles an hour. After vanishing at the base of the falls for a few heart-stopping minutes, he reappeared to claim the new world record in waterfall descents. The 26-year-old, who has spent the last 4 years searching his country for the perfect location, shattered the previous 108-foot record. Now, there are no, you know, there's nothing else to it more. That's pretty much it. But you guys got to go watch the video. I'll post a link up to it so you guys can take a look at it. It was wild. I mean, I don't think I'd have enough guts to go and do that. Now, the next article, again, courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And I just thought it was interesting. The title caught my eye. It says, Anchorage murder trial begins with tales of aliens. It says, yes, he confessed, but Christopher Aaron Rogers didn't actually kill anyone in Anchorage in December 2007. Defense attorney David Weber told a jury Tuesday as Rogers' murder trial got underway in Anchorage. The day Jason Winger was shot and killed in Spinard, and Liz Rumsey was shot and seriously injured on a downtown bike trail, Rogers watched the news, Weber said. And the next day, whenever he decided to steal Tama Deek's car, he imitated what he'd seen and shot Deek. Then he fabricated a confession. How could jurors tell Rogers' confession to all the shootings was bogus? Aliens, Weber explained. Roger told police at one point that aliens made him shoot Winger, Rumsey, and Deek. However, aliens don't speak to people, Weber said, so that was obviously not true. He flashed pictures of ET, crop circles, and giant satellite dishes on a projector in the courtroom to illustrate his point. Weber explained to jurors that he couldn't call the aliens to check, but it was safe to assume that they didn't tell Rogers to shoot people. Rogers made up the aliens just like he made up the rest of his confession, he said. The jury hasn't been told that Rogers was convicted last year of a murder in Palmer County for hacking his father and stepmother with a machete, leaving his father dead. He's on trial in Anchorage for what happened afterwards. Police say he drove his father's truck to Anchorage and went on a shooting rampage attacking strangers over a two-day period. Winger was killed. Rumsey and Deek were seriously injured. Police found Rogers in Deek's car and arrested him. They say he fired into police cruisers during a chase attempting to kill the officers. Now, I haven't heard a whole lot more about this as far as whether or not the guy got convicted or if his alien insanity plea or whatever it is, got him off. But the guy looks like I've known guys that look like this guy. He's bald with a big, fat, huge goatee, white guy. But, at the same time, he does look like he's crazy. I don't really know. All I do know is that when it comes down to it, I really don't think aliens are going to tell you to go and shoot people. I mean, see, this doesn't bode well for people who truly have had some kind of an experience with an alien. I believe that there could be people out there that have had true experiences with aliens. See, this doesn't bode well for them because people like him are lying about it, which makes everybody think that we're all crazy. Everybody who says they've seen an alien, everybody's going to think they're nuts now because of people like this, at least in my opinion. I mean, maybe the guy did see aliens. Maybe he had some kind of mental illness. I don't really know. All I do know is that stuff like this, where they're, trying to make people seem like they're crazy, doesn't bode well for people who really, truly had that kind of experience. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. Anyway, we'll move on. The next thing that I wanted to talk about is just a wiki article. It's something that I noticed. I can't even remember where I found this, but I decided to look it up. And the website, I'll post two links to it. One of the websites was planeofjars.com, I believe. I'll post a link up to it. But this one's article is about the Plain of Jars. And I'd never heard about this place. It's an interesting thing. It's just a bunch of jars made out of stone. And some of them are huge, like 10 foot tall. It says the Plain of Jars is a large group of historic cultural sites in Laos containing thousands of stone jars, which lie scattered throughout the Jing Quang Plain in the Laos Highlands, the principal mountain range in Indochina, the Annamese Cordillera. I probably am butchering this, but in the context of the Vietnam War and the Secret War, the Plain of Jars typically refers to the entire Jing Quang Plain rather than the cultural sites themselves. The Plain of Jars, there are a total of more than 400 sites across the whole Plain of Jars that centers in on the area, the range of the Korat Plateau in Thailand in the south. The jars lie in clusters. The largest one near the town of Phonsavan, known as Site 1, contains over 250 jars of varying sizes. The jars now lie amidst thousands of unexploded bombs left behind by the secret war in Laos in the 1960s. The large quantity of UXOs, or unexploded ordnances, in particular cluster munitions in the area, means that only sites 1, 2, and 3 are open to visitors. I just thought it was really, really interesting that site number 1, there's these huge jars. There's this one picture with four kids on it, and they're standing on it, and it looks like you could probably fit 15 kids down inside this huge jar. And site one, it doesn't really look like it has too many of them, but jar site 3, there's pictures of it you guys can look at. They're all over the place. And it looks like they would have had to make these jars in place where they were. I mean, to be able to move something like this, I mean, the biggest one, the one that those kids are standing on, would weigh tons. I mean, it would just be a huge ordeal to try and move. But anyway, there's a lot more. It talks about the current situation of the remains of the most dangerous archaeological site in the world, which is the Plain of Jars. But you guys go take a look at it. Like I said, I'll post more up to it for you to take a look at. This next article that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of UFOcasebook.com, and it's the eyewitness to O'Hare UFO releases the video, and you can see it on this site that I'll post. I hate to say that the video is pretty uneventful, and it's really hard to tell if it really is the one that was filmed, at O'Hare. A video posted on March 21st of 2009 on YouTube claims to be the real deal of the November 7th, 2006 Chicago O'Hare Airport UFO sighting. The video is posted with the headline, "Chicago O'Hare Airport UFO Witness Breaks His Silence." The username is O'Hare UFO Witness, age 39, someone who joined YouTube on the same day as posting the video. Illinois MUFON director Sam Moronto, who has studied this case extensively, was able to watch the video from a Chicago area home and said that the video footage is shot at an impossible angle, Moronto said. It was 1,500 to 1,900 foot above gate C17, 200 to 400 foot below the solid overcast, too bright of a backdrop, too big of an object, unless this person was in a tower where it could not have been seen. On the YouTube page, this person related the following story. Now, there's a lot to this, so I won't read all of it. I'll just read the first little bit. You guys can go and finish reading the rest of it. It said, "I had sat on this evidence for over 2 years, mainly because of the nature of my background. If you knew who I was, then you would understand. Back on November 7th, 2006, I was near Chicago O'Hare International Airport when I was a witness to what was arguably one of the most important UFO incidents in modern times. After the incident, many people jumped into the UFO bandwagon and came forward with false evidence. I can't speak for those individuals. I can only speak for myself." So anyway, though, like I said, there's a lot more to it there. Just below what the reader posted is the actual video. It's 59 seconds long, and really all you're going to see is a dish-shaped object and a bright background. It doesn't really do anything for you to let you know that they're actually at the airport. It doesn't pan around. It doesn't show you the airport and then show you where it's at. It doesn't give you any type of real idea as to really anything. I mean, if it is the O'Hare UFO, then it's amazing footage, but I don't know. I have my doubts. Anyway, I'll post a link up to it. You guys go take a look at it and, draw the conclusions for yourself. All right, now this next article that I wanted to talk about, I just found it really fascinating. It's courtesy of allnewsweb.com, and it's something that I talked about in the news maybe 2 weeks ago or so. It says, "Conventional science has it that dinosaurs were wiped out many millions of years ago, either as a result of climate change or a meteorite hitting the Earth. But now, some people are noticing dinosaur images in temple ruins. Some researchers, however, claim that the dinosaurs might have continued to roam remote parts of the Earth as recently as a few hundred years ago. A few even claim that there might be some small populations of dinosaurs, otherwise believed to be extinct, surviving in the world's most isolated forests. Like I said, I read about this in the news. I'm sure you guys heard about it. It's in the Ta Prohm Temple in the jungles of Cambodia. And basically someone found what looks to be a stegosaurus chiseled into, you know, the temple ruin. And according to conventional science, this species existed in North America and died out around 155 million years ago. But villagers in the vicinity of the temple are said to retain traditions of the animals existing until fairly recent times. And I thought it was really interesting that there could be dinosaurs still alive. Now, there are animals that are alive, such as crocodiles and alligators and stuff, that were alive during the times of the dinosaurs that have existed to today. So it wouldn't surprise me. And there are some extraordinarily remote places on this planet. So it really wouldn't surprise me if there were animals still of that nature on this planet. I can't really say that there would be any that would be in huge populations, you know, very obviously, like they said, small populations of them surviving in some of the world's most isolated forests. And I think that it could be possible, but I think that at least at one point in time or another, somebody would have seen it. But then again, I think about that statement and I think to myself, well, there are a lot of other species on this planet that are just being discovered. So how long have they been here and we haven't known about them? And they're species that are being discovered and documented for the first time ever on this planet. So why couldn't there be dinosaurs still alive, be it one or two or five or ten? If some of these animals don't live in herds or, you know, large quantities, big populations, they only meet each other to reproduce, then it really wouldn't surprise me if you would only have six or ten of them that could survive for millions of years. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, like I said, I'll post a picture up to it. There is a picture of what was found in that temple, you know, the Stegosaurus carving. So there is a picture there of it, a picture of the temple, and a picture, obviously, of a Stegosaurus. But if anybody thinks, if you have an opinion, you think they're still around, you think they're not around for whatever reason, let me know if you think dinosaurs are around or not. I mean, personally, I believe that there could be even just the smallest chance that there could be one alive. I think that there could be. I don't think that there's a large population. But anyway, if you guys think that there's dinosaurs out there, let me know. This next article was courtesy of azcentral.com, and I just found this funny. I don't know why I found this funny, but I found this to be quite a unique, interesting concept for someone. And you know, I mean, I don't think it could really hold any water, but I thought it was funny. In Easton, Pennsylvania, a man accused of driving drunk said Pennsylvania courts have no jurisdiction over him because he's his own country. After seeing the paperwork that 44-year-old Scott Allen Whitmer filed with the court claiming sovereignty, a Northampton court judge said Tuesday he cannot be released from jail until he gets a mental exam. Whitmer, who represented himself, said he believes police lack jurisdiction to pull him over. As he said in court, "I live inside myself, not in Pennsylvania." He said there is no victim in the crime, and he asked to go to trial. Defense attorney James Connell, Whitmer's standby counsel, said a challenge to the traffic stop would need to be filed as a pretrial motion. Now, this guy is claiming to be his own country. Now, that is true. You might be your own country. You might live inside yourself, not inside Pennsylvania. But you may not live in Pennsylvania, but you live on Pennsylvania. Now, if you lived inside Pennsylvania, you'd have to be living in a house underground or in a cave. Then you'd be in Pennsylvania. He does live inside himself. I live inside myself. You live inside yourself, and you don't live, like, I don't live in Texas. I live on Texas. I live on Texas soil. So therefore, if you live on their soil, you have to abide by their rules and their laws. They do have jurisdiction over you because you live over their property. Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting, funny that somebody tried to pull the I'm my own country claim to get out of a traffic stop.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
Chet and Harry are two recently unemployed construction workers on the way to a weekend of southern comfort and frog gigging at their musty, rusted RV parked at their favorite hunting camp when they stumble upon Bob, the mysterious, busty, burka-clad, non-English-speaking beauty just standing in the middle of nowhere on the side of dusty 9-mile cutoff in rural Bovina, Mississippi. Then, all hell breaks loose. Their favorite pond is missing. They're being chased by truck-driving zombies, dirty cops, and UFOs. Someone stole Chet's jacked-up Scottsdale 4-wheel drive. Zombies are traipsing around their trailer, and Crazy Uncle Crank is trying to feed them zombie chicken for dinner. Aided by a classic computer nerd, a crazy man wielding a frying pan, and a space babe who gets naked anytime someone turns out the lights, follow Chet and Harry as they struggle to find answers. Why is their pond missing, and why did the Dodge of Death spring from the muddy crater left in its center? Who is Bob, and why is she so good with shotguns? Why are they being chased by two really skinny, pale weirdos? What is the Dirty County Sheriff hiding, and will Chet and Harry ever make it out alive? Find out by listening to Fried Green Zombies, the new audiobook podcast by John Allen. Subscribe on iTunes or Zoom Marketplace, or visit friedgreenzombies.com.
Are you looking for a new podcast to listen to? One that covers all topics of the entertainment industry? Look no further than Doomcast. Doomcast covers a wide variety of entertainment topics, including video games, movies, television, and even other podcasts. For more information, please visit the official Doomcast website at www.doomcastonline.com.
Now, this next article is quite a long article, so I'm not going to go through it all. And it's, again, courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And after this one, we've got three more coming to you from them. They just got so much great stuff on here. It's terrific. I love it. But this next article is Ghost Bus Passenger Captured on a Cell Phone. Now, I looked at the picture. I actually downloaded the picture and looked at it a little bit closer, and I can't really see any type of a ghost in the picture, but they're claiming that there is. And it says, according to the Chinese Daily, Mr. Chi Lei Fu, who's 40, said that he has had the ability to see spirits since he was 6. Mr. Chen, who works in advertising, said that when on Sunday night, he was surprised to find a small boy playing a fool in the bus. The boy, whom Mr. Chen said looked to be about 9 years old, was playing and talking to himself, but no one on the bus seemed to notice. He was at the front of the bus and even turned to talk to the bus driver, but the driver showed no response. At one point, the boy even came to the back of the bus where he was sitting to count the number of people on the bus. Mr. Chen said the boy had asked the driver, "Was there an accident?" But the driver did not respond and did not seem to notice his presence. He then moved to the back of the bus where he sat beside Mr. Chen and began counting the number of people on the bus before stopping to exclaim, "Wow, so many people." Apparently, the boy took an interest in Mr. Chen once he realized he could see him. Mr. Chen said he was on the bus for 7 minutes throughout the ride. The boy did not stop playing and, according to Mr. Chen, creating a scene. During the journey, Mr. Chen noticed two male passengers, one Chinese, the other Indian, looking over in the boy's general direction, but they did not do anything. According to Mr. Chen, he developed the ability to see spirits after he fell ill with a high fever when he was a child. Apparently, he only saw them as white shadows until 2006 when the figures began to take on human shapes and likenesses. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting that he could see spirits. And that there might maybe have been one or two other people on the bus that could have seen him. Now, maybe the bus driver, sorry, I just hit the mic there. Maybe the bus driver was just too busy driving. Maybe he just doesn't like kids. Maybe the kid really was there, but maybe it was a ghost. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting. So anyway, I just wanted to post that up there for you guys to go and take a look at. Now, this next article, I just thought it was weird. It's amazing what goes on with the witch hunts over in Africa. It's amazing to me. This article is courtesy of RadioNetherlands.nl, and it says, up to 1,000 kidnapped in Gambian witch hunt. It says, witchcraft still dominates daily life in many African countries. A recent report by Amnesty International shows that in Gambia, over 1,000 ordinary people have been kidnapped simply because they are believed to be witches. Special witch doctors from neighboring Guinea have been appointed to heal these people. Dutch anthropology professor Dr. Wouter van Beek of the University of Tilburg has a simple explanation as to why this is why this strict belief has become so widespread. Witchcraft normally occurs when there are severe problems in society, and obviously in African society, problems are rampant. People put the blame from these problems on the witches, as it's so easy to have someone to blame is an easy way out. Which, I mean, I guess according to this guy, that's why it would be so widespread. And in ways, I can understand that. People want some kind of a scapegoat for it. It says, very often the witch is someone from people's own circles or an enemy within one's gates. As Professor Van Beek calls it, it's easier to blame your co-wife or neighbor for the problems you're in than someone you don't know. Although witchcraft is very common in Africa, there are occasional crazes when there's an unexplained explosion of witch hunts. Now, I'm not disputing witchcraft or saying that it doesn't exist or it doesn't work or anything like that. I haven't ever really messed around with it, so I personally, from experience, don't know. But I just think it's interesting that people would have such a wide belief that witches are causing their problems. You know, I mean, maybe there are some witches out there causing problems. I don't know if it would be so widespread as to be, you know, over an entire country, but anyway, I don't know. I'm not an expert on witches or cultures or anything like that. I just thought it was interesting that, I mean, 1,000 people. That's a lot of people, y'all. That really is. It's a lot of people to be kidnapping. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. So I'll post a link up to it. There's quite a bit more to that article than that. It goes through the enemy, which is explains the witch. It also goes into explaining the president of the country and how it's generally accepted and the rationale for, you know, why it's there. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Like I said, I'll post a link up to it so you guys can go and read the whole article for yourself. Now, this next article, again, actually the next three, are courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a ufologist discovers strange stone carvings in Ute Valley Park. I'm not really sure how you really say that, but anyway, it's kind of a long article. I won't be reading all of it either, but it is a creepy, gargoyle-ish, demon-like face that was carved into this rock. It's got this evil, pointy chin with deep, dark-set eyes, a wide nose, evil grin, this demonic kind of, like I said, gargoyle-ish kind of face. It says, UFO field investigator Chuck Zukowski likes to think of himself as a skeptic. He won't throw his UFO detective gear in his truck and drive out to the middle of nowhere just because someone says they saw a few glowing orbs over a field. Zukowski is nationally known in skywatching circles as a meticulous documenter of the unexplainable. In 20 years of UFO investigating, he has helped organize archaeological digs at UFO hotspots near Roswell. Down at the bottom, it cites more studies that he's done. But anyway, he says he inspected a strange stone found in the New Mexico desert, expertly carved with a design that also appeared in a crop circle in England. He has appeared as an expert on the Sci-Fi Channel and the super late night paranormal radio show Coast to Coast AM, which in some circles would really degrade his credibility, and in some circles would really heighten his credibility to know that he's been on Coast to Coast. The rock near the point where these kids saw some lights, Zukowski stumbled on the two faces carved into the stone. One looks a bit like a grinning Janus mask that high school drama clubs always put on their t-shirts, you know those masks? The other's crude features look a bit more tribal, almost like an Easter Island head, which it really does, but a little more demonish in my eyes. You probably wouldn't notice them, it says, if you were just a normal contemporary, you know, hiker, you know, going by it. But it's interesting. He says that he brought a few rock experts and a city park official to the site. Both, he said, indicated indicated that they would get back to him, and they never did. Now, it doesn't really go into anything about where it came from, who did it, how old it might be, but it does say it might be an American Indian record of an extraterrestrial encounter. He even says that the high neighbor theory is plausible, and he wants scientists to take a look and decide for themselves. Now, I want you guys to go take a look at these pictures. Now, there's only two. There's one kind of a drawn back picture that shows guy, I'm guessing that's Mr. Zukowski himself, that standing next to one of these rock carvings, and the one right above it, the larger photograph, is actually of the one that I was describing. So I'm not really sure what it is. It almost looks like it's part of limestone, maybe. I'm not really sure. It doesn't really give a whole lot of descriptions of it, what it is, where it's at. Who? I mean, it does say that it's, you know, it's in New Mexico, but still, you guys go take a look at it. If anybody's seen these pictures before, knows that, you know, what they are, where they came from, let me know. If you have an idea of where they are, let me know. I'd love to hear about them. Now, this next article, again, is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a recent underwater volcano eruption in the Tonga Coast. Now, I'm sure you guys have already heard about this. It says an underwater volcano has erupted close to the Tonga Coast in the South Pacific Ocean. Scientists sailed in to inspect the volcano, which has been shooting smoke, steam, and ash into the air at near the low-lying twin volcanic islands of Hunga Tonga and Hunga Haiapai. I hope that's how you say it. Local authorities say coastal villages close to the active volcano were not yet at risk, and that no warnings have been issued. And there is a video, a live leak video of it there, and it's awesome. I mean, if anybody, you've seen volcanoes erupt, you've all seen the famous Mount St. Helens footage and volcanoes erupting and all kinds of stuff. But have you ever seen one erupting from underwater? For me, that's the most awesome kind of volcanoes is the one that erupts from the surface of the water up into the air. It's amazing to me, and the picture that's there is just awesome. I mean, to know that all this stuff is going up through the water up into the air, you know, that's making its way through the water, it's amazing enough. I wonder what kind of environmental effects that'll have, or, you know, anything like that. But anyway, the reason I wanted to talk about this is I want you guys to go watch the video. It's amazing. I don't know if you guys like geology or anything like that, but I love it, and it's one of my main fascinations, along with archaeology and the paranormal, and I mean, just about everything fascinates me anyway. Doesn't necessarily, I mean, I believe most of it, but this volcano is amazing footage. So you guys go take a look at it, and you know, if anybody else finds any more footage of it or anything like that, let me know. I'll post it up for everybody else to take a look at. All right, well, this next last article, I hate to say, we're going to have to call this the last article of the show because we're running pretty long, is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com, and it's a long article. I won't go all into it, but again, I'll post it up there for you guys to go read and take a look at it, because there's quite a bit there. I'd spend the next 20 minutes just sitting here reading through it. But the article caught my eye, and it's John Bobacombe Lee, The Man They Could Not Hang. And I thought it was really interesting because they couldn't hang him. What would have caused the hanging to not go the right way? Anyway, it says, throughout the past 100 years, the myth surrounding John Bobacombe Lee's story has taken on a life of their own. Urban legends, ghostly sightings, and tales of supernatural intervention have grown far beyond what anybody in the 19th century South Devon or Devon could have imagined for the lowly manservant. Lee, nicknamed the Man They Could Not Hang, came to prominence when he was convicted of murdering his employer, Emma Keese, and set fire to their Bobacombe home called the Glen. Mike Holgate, an expert on John Lee, said during his trial, the prosecution portrayed Lee as a depraved lunatic capable of smashing an old lady's head with an axe, then slashing her throat with a knife. The judge, in passing sentence of death, remarked how calm Lee's demeanor had been throughout the trial. Lee is said to have leaned forward in the dock and replied firmly, "The reason why I am so calm is that I trust in the Lord, and He knows I am innocent." In the days leading up to the date of execution, Lee read the Bible prodigiously and claimed his innocence. It is said that he told the prison chaplain the real culprit was the lover of his half-sister, Elizabeth Harris, who was the cook at the Glen and expecting a child, which was later delivered out of wedlock in the Newton Abbott Workhouse. The prison governor's logbook states in the morning of the execution, as Lee approached the gallows trapdoor, he told two prison guards he had dreamt three times the bolt was drawn and three times the bolt failed to act. Lee was a lonely figure on the gallows, but each time an attempt was made to open the trapdoor, it stuck. After each failed attempt, the trapdoor was tested and it opened normally, but when Lee stood on it again, the door would not open. Three times this happened, each with the same outcome. It is rumored that throughout the ordeal of the scaffold, a white dove perched on the gallows until the condemned man was led safely back to his prison cell. The Home Secretary told Parliament he could not expect a man to twice face the pangs of imminent death. Lee began a 23-year prison sentence in Exeter, and from that day the myths about his life spread across the world. Witchcraft and devilish incantations were often talked of when people tried to reason Lee's escape from death. Friends of Lee claimed that he paid a white witch handsomely to save him from the noose. Other people told the stories of how Lee's mother had visited the church's graveyard near her home in Abbotsgerwell, recited the Lord's Prayer backwards, and summoned the devil to save her son. Also, an old woman called Granny Lee from Ogwell is said to have told locals that they shall not hang him, as she walked to Exeter on the morning of the execution and cast a spell on the gallows from a spot overlooking the prison. In 1905, the witchcraft theory gained credence from a surprising source, the Archdeacon of Westminster, Basil Wyberforce. At the time of the murder, he had been a regular visitor to Babbacombe, where he addressed temperance meetings organized by a distinguished neighbor of Emma Keyes, Lady Mount Temple of Babbacombe Cliff. Whether miracle or sorcery, the events of the scaffold cast doubt in many people's minds about Lee's guilt. The editor of the Times, who poured scorn on the Home Secretary's decision to eventually reprieve Lee, said Lee's story would encourage foolish and superstitious people to believe, in spite of evidence as clear as noonday, that Lee was wrongfully convicted. After his release, Lee went to London, where he then eloped with a barmaid, abandoning his wife, who was expecting their second child. He then seemingly disappeared without a trace, having reportedly visited Australia, America, and Canada. And Mike Holgate only recently discovered that he died in 1945. Mike traced the grave to a cemetery in Milwaukee. Records show Lee died at age 80 on March 19th of 1945. But the legend did not certainly die with Mr. Lee, because Mike recently recorded a number of spooky tales about the man they could not hang. I just thought it was really interesting that even though he stood on the gallows, when they would pull the pin, it would not come loose. But as soon as he would move and they would pull the pin, it would drop down as soon as he would get back on. Now see, I'm not thinking anything superstitious, no magic, no miracles, no conjuring the devil for it. What I'm thinking is that when he stood on it, his weight caused it to jam somehow. That's what my logical mind is saying, that whenever he stood on it, his weight caused it to jam. When he would get off of it, his weight wouldn't be there to cause it to jam up somehow, so it would release normally. But people, man, I swear, they were always trying to blame something on, you know, some kind of paranormal, supernatural type of thing. But at the same time, maybe it was the white bird, the white dove sitting on top of the gallows. Maybe that was a sign. I mean, that is a sign of peace. It is a sign of love and, you know, stuff. People release it at their weddings and things like that. But I don't really know. I mean, maybe God was there to save him because he truly was innocent and was going to be murdered for it. But anyway, I just thought it was really neat. If anybody else has an opinion on, you know, the man they could not hang, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. ladies and gentlemen, guys and gals, I hate to say that we've come to the end of the show. This is all I have time for today. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Like I said, I'll post links up and pictures up to everything that I've talked about in today's show. If you like, sign the Frapper map. I love to know where people are listening from. If you want to support the show, give me a review in iTunes. Give me a vote in Podcast Alley. If you want to communicate somehow, shoot me your feedback, comments, experiences. Shoot it to the13skulls@gmail.com. If you have a promo, news links, anything like that, send it to info@the13skulls.com. Or if you feel like talking it up, call me. Leave a voicemail at 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. If you like the music that's in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at iotaalliance.com. I'll post links up in this posting to download the music if you like them. There will also be links there to buy the music if you like it so much that you want them that badly on the13skulls.com with this posting for the show. I really do appreciate all of you guys coming out and listening to the show. You guys have been terrific. You guys are wonderful people. I love you to death. So please take care. Have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to the show. And as always, I will talk to you guys again on another day.